Saturday afternoon, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com. We're pleased to welcome back to the program, good friend of the show, Mike McKenna. Mike, of course, you know, as an NHL goaltender. Mike, good morning and good afternoon, rather. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Central Time Zone. Here we are, right?
So exactly.
Thanks for having me again.
Our pleasure. Yeah, it's our pleasure, Mike. We appreciate you joining us on this afternoon. You know, Mike, we obviously brought you on to talk about, you know, everything that's going around in the NHL. You look at the Stanley Cup playoffs, which the Bruins are through to the Eastern, to the Stanley Cup final, having swept the Carolina Hurricanes. And we'll start there. You know, what's it going to be like for these Bruins players to have 11 days off between their last game in the conference finals and their first game in the Stanley Cup final? Is that too much time off from a player's perspective?
That's almost uncharted territory.
Yeah, longest it's ever been.
Right. I mean, that is a huge amount of time. I think I've done, I mean, almost a week before, I believe, in my career, and that seemed like after the first couple of days, you're just eager and waiting to play. But I think, I don't know. I don't think it's going to affect at all. I know that if they come out and don't play well right away, of course, that's going to be the easy crutch to lean on for people to blame. But to me, I think it's a great opportunity to have your players get healthy, get some juice back in the batteries, take a couple of days off to just relax a little bit, because the playoffs are such a grind that a lot of times you don't even truly get to enjoy things. So I'm sure it'll be nice for them to be able to get home, see their families, see their kids, you know, go have a dinner or two, things like that, to just get ready for the next series.
Mike, you started writing recently for NHL.com, and you wrote about Game 4 of the Eastern Final and how the Hurricanes might have wasted a really good performance from your former AHL teammate, Curtis McIlhenny. Obviously, Tuukka Rask, you know, gets the shutout, his seventh straight win. His numbers, you know, in the playoffs, as you know, are just absolutely ridiculous. Conn Smythe favorite right now. But can you just talk about how great of a story that is for Curtis McIlhenny? He's obviously a guy that wasn't supposed to be the Hurricanes' number one goaltender at any point in the season, but he came in and he really gave the Hurricanes a chance to win those games in Carolina.
Curtis has been nothing but a battler his entire career, and we've known each other all the way back to 2005. We actually went to our first pro training camp together. He started in Calgary. I didn't go to that one, but then he came to Omaha in the American Hockey League, and that's where I started out, at least going to camps. So we've known each other for a long time. We were teammates again in Columbus a few years ago. He's just a super guy, and you know, for whatever reason, sometimes you get labeled things in this game, and he's been labeled as a backup, and I've been labeled as a number three guy, and you know, that just seems to be what your role ends up being, is whatever is defined you. But that should never let anybody think that he can't play the game as a number one. He's just never had the opportunity to truly run with it in some scenarios, and you've seen how diligent he is about his game. I mean, watch him play. You can see shades of Sergei Bobrovsky, Freddie Anderson, the guys that he's played with alongside. You can see things that he's learned from goalie coaches, and he's always stepped up into the spotlight and been able to perform when called upon, and that's what's allowed him to have such a long career. I'm not surprised that he did what he did at all.
You know, Mike, talk about how inspiring it must be for young goaltenders to see what Jordan Binnington's doing, because, you know, he's a guy who I believe is in his sixth professional season, probably passed by Ville Husso, who was, you know, the younger, I think he was drafted 3 years later, 2014, by the Blues, and probably the guy who was expected to kind of take the mantle this season in San Antonio. But then you had Binnington get the call and was able to do what he did. So, you know, talking about that idea of, you know, being able to throw off the mantle that you're given, is that inspiring for young goaltenders who may have been looked, quote, been passed by?
It could be for young guys that are, you know, 22, 23, but I think it's more so for the mid-pack guys that are entering the middle portion of their career where there's some uncertainty. They don't know where they're going to be playing again. They're just hoping to, one, get another contract, and two, hopefully even find an organization that believes in them. And to be honest with you, I bet you Jordan Binnington wasn't even thinking he was coming back to the Blues organization after this year, to be honest, when the year started. And now all of a sudden, look at what he is. You know, he's a bona fide NHL goaltender. They're going to have to back up the money truck to the guy here eventually. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think the guys that are really find more inspiration out of Jordan's story are going to be some of the pros that have been playing 2, 3, 4 years, just knocking on the door, waiting for a chance and seeing that it can still happen. You can still end up being a full-time NHL guy at 25 or 26 to start your career.
Mike McKenna is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Mike from his NHL playing career and, of course, his podcast, 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Mike, you get to be commissioner for a day. Is there more instant replay? Is there less instant replay? And if there is more instant replay, what can be reviewed that currently isn't reviewed?
Well, if I was commissioner, everybody would hate me because I'd throw a video review right out the window. I'd let the refs do their job, call, you know, whatever happened, be damned. That's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't seem to be what people want. So I think that you have to listen to your fans in this scenario. They're the ones who are clamoring for video replay. They want to see things end up with the right call. And it's the same way for us on the ice, too. I mean, we want to see that, but there is a fine balance of how much replay do you have. So I just don't know what the right scenario is going to be for it, whether they put an extra set of eyes in the stands or whether they define more things that can be reviewable, or if they just make it a free-for-all with the review. I don't know what the proper answer is, but I do think that they're going to have to look at it and be willing to include a little bit more just because so many people are clamoring for it.
You know, Mike, going back to the Western Conference Final, because the Eastern Conference Final is obviously over, the big win for the St. Louis Blues yesterday in Game 4, and, you know, both sides right now are dealing with injuries. You've got Erik Karlsson, who clearly is got that lingering groin issue, and then you've got Vince Dunn, who obviously isn't in the lineup for the Blues right now. But when you talk about, you know, some of the ice time that you're seeing these guys put up, defensemen specifically, Jay Bouwmeester was on the ice for almost 4 minutes yesterday, which is just... It's bonkers, the fact that he was on for that long of a shift. But you're talking about Brent Burns, who we're always expecting to play close to 30 minutes a game. But, you know, for someone who's been in the playoffs, you've been through that grind before. I mean, what is it like to see, you know, these guys just at this time of the year still playing upwards of, you know, 30 minutes a night?
Something you don't even really think about, you know. Like, for me as a goaltender, when I'd gotten that deep into the playoffs, especially the past two seasons, going all the way to June 13th and 14th, you're just playing, and you're just continuing what you've done during the season, and you're having that much more fun doing it at that stage of the game that you don't really think about how much it's wearing down on your body. And so the adrenaline helps carry you through it. You feel it a little bit more after the game. You feel it when the season's over. But then again, the guys that are not playing right now, they're at home starting their summer training. So I think we'd all much rather be on the ice, given everything we can out there, than we would be in a weight room, because I think playing for something important is way more fun than slugging weights at 7 or 8 in the morning, you know? So it's impressive to see those guys, but it's what you come to expect. That's what they're paid for to do, you know? You know you're going to get 30 minutes from Brent Burns, and you know Erik Karlsson's going to play through whatever he can to try to get his team to the final.
You know, Mike, as a guy who has deep ties to Missouri hockey and the St. Louis area, what does it mean for folks in that region, in the city, to have the Blues playing as well as they are and obviously having a chance to go for the Stanley Cup?
The city loves hockey, and it has for a very long time. It's something that has kind of been an undercover secret, I think, around the league, really, until maybe the Winter Classic a few years ago. That kind of brought us on the map, and then also with so many of the kids coming from youth hockey, going in the first round of the 24 NHL players, Stanley Cup winner. Hockey's here. It's always been here. But we've always been kind of overshadowed by the Cardinals, I believe, in St. Louis. So if this city were to win the Stanley Cup, I'm telling you, people would go bonkers. I mean, they know how to celebrate a World Series, but they've been waiting 50 years for a Stanley Cup, and the whole city to be painted blue probably until training camp starts next year.
Mike McKenna is a professional goaltender. He's also a podcaster. You can check out his podcast, 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna, available wherever podcasts are available. Mike, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure. Always a blast coming on with you guys.
Thanks. Take care, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
When we come back, Dom Luchison of The Athletic presented...
Easy for you to say.
Easy for... At least I don't have to spell it. Spelling it is way harder. Came up with 15 changes to improve the NHL. We go through his list, say what we like, dislike, and maybe even throw out a few of our own. That's up next. How do we change the game for the better? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hockey's thing, a centering pass scores! The game is tied!
Are they checking for offside here? There's a little bit of a delay here.
They are. You got to watch the bench. That's the key. That's the key. That's offside. That player is offside. It's a sloppy change.
After coach's challenge, it's determined the play was
Offside.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday afternoon, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. Been a ton of talk during these playoffs about the rules, about officiating, and we'll talk about that, of course, as we get into the Western Conference final discussion in the third hour. Dom Luchishin of TheAthletic.com came out with an article with 15 changes he would see made to the game to better improve the game. We're not going to go through all of them because some of them have been talked about ad nauseum, you know, on this show and on other shows. You know, we don't need to talk about the NHL point system anymore. We all agree that it's broken. The only people who don't think it's broken are the brains in the NHL. So let's start with the first one he says, which is playoff seeding. Instead of it, you know, the current format where it's in division, you go back to a similar to a 1-8 playoff format.
Yep.
Or a, you know, this year the Montreal Canadiens, for example, finished 14th overall in the NHL and they weren't a playoff team. You do some changes to accommodate things like that. So he suggests a play-in game against the worst playoff team. Your thoughts on that suggestion, and I have a tweak to that one I want to bring up as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a no-brainer. I mean, the first three we're going to go through here, as you mentioned, there's 15, and some of them really have no chance of
no
ever
chance.
Happening. But
yeah.
When you're talking about, you know, the point system, I agree. I mean, we all are on the same page mm-hmm. with the point system, playoff seeding. I mean, I just really think it just makes it's more fair. That's really what it comes down to. It makes it more fair. You shouldn't have to the Toronto Maple Leafs should not have to face the Boston Bruins in the first round when you consider that their point totals were what they were.
Or the Jets and the Predators
sure.
last year in the second
right.
round.
Right. So yeah. I realize the NHL loves rivalries and parity and all of that, but just go back to pre-2013-14. Mm-hmm. That's when the new point system, playoff seeding system came in.
Yeah.
So just go back to the old one. 1-8. I have no problem, you know, like having the, you know, the game at the end, kind of like in baseball, right? You have the wild card game. I have no problem with that.
I would tweak it a little bit. Here's how I would tweak it. And I mean, you know, obviously it'll need a little bit of work. Right now, there is no reward to speak of for finishing atop your division, for finishing as one of the better teams in your conference. Do it if you want these play-in games, and they're all very popular, and baseball does it, and everybody likes it because it's one game, do or die, very similar to March Madness and college basketball, and everybody likes that sort of idea. You know, you finish in the, if you're one of the top four teams in your conference, you're guaranteed to play in a 7-game series. If you're finished, if you're one, if you're, you know, between 5 and 8 in your conference, play a 1-game series or play a best of 3 or something like that. Really make it a reward for finishing, you know, towards the top of your conference as opposed to how it currently is, where there really is ostensibly no reward at all, no difference between finishing first and finishing 8th.
Or you could do what they did in the early to mid 80s, which was one division. And if you look at that, it would have been Tampa Bay, Vegas this year, Calgary, Dallas, Boston, Montreal, which would be amazing, Washington versus Columbus, the Islanders versus the Blues, San Jose versus Carolina, the Leafs versus the Jets,
yeah.
and Nashville versus Pittsburgh.
So you get rid of conferences, you get rid of, I mean, you don't.
Just everything, just one division.
Yeah. All this talk about travel to me is so overblown. These guys aren't traveling
Let me tell you, I'd like to travel that way.
I would travel that way too. You're traveling in charter jets, and there's ways to mitigate it. I mean, you're so worried about travel for the playoffs. You never hear them talk about travel during the 82 games of the regular season. Mm-hmm. But in the playoffs, traveling is such a burden on people. It's a little bit much if you ask me.
Let's get to number 3 here. I mean,
you're on board with this one. Abolish the shootout.
Yeah, and I love how Dom puts it here. No one cares about the shootout anymore. That's verbatim mm-hmm. what he says in the article, and he's right. I mean, 3-on-3 overtime hockey, we all agree, is far superior to the shootout. And realistically, I mean, how many people, like, talk to me about one shootout that you remember from this year. I mean, honestly, can you remember one single shootout?
I'm pretty sure the only shootout we can remember is the one with the Rangers when they went, what, 16
rounds?
16
was it Marek Malik?
Between the legs.
Yeah. So, I mean, he even references 538.com. It's a great website. It's a statistical analysis website.
Yeah.
And he says 84% of 3-on-3s would be solved in the first 10 minutes. So, basically, if you abolish the shootout, you extend overtime by 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And that's something that
and if after 10 minutes, you know, at 3-on-3 hockey, if the game's still tied, it ends in a tie.
Yeah. So, bring back the tie games.
And the reality is, are you going to tell me folks wouldn't rather have 5 minutes of overtime, 3-on-3, versus 5 minutes of... First of all, you have to wait for the shootout.
Yeah,
I mean, you're not waiting as long as you used to, but at least you're still waiting. And then it goes, and it just, it seems always anticlimactic.
And again, they're so worried, oh, what about the burden it'll place on the players to potentially play up to five more minutes every now and then for a game that goes to a shootout. I mean, it's just a little bit much how, you know, on the left hand, oh, we're so concerned about the players, we're so concerned about the players. But on the right hand, everything they do is not concerned about the players. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Get rid of the shootout, you keep it going. Number four, he mentions full-time 4-on-4.
Right, and this is where, I mean, Dom even mentions that, you know, he says, you know, the first three were no-brainers, and then, you know, he says, I'm going to introduce a little chaos into this, but the likelihood of this happening is obviously slim, right? I mean, the NHL is not going to go to 4-on-4 ever. I understand it would be very entertaining, but you're talking about how many jobs would be lost. I mean, you're talking about...
The NHLPA would never...
Yeah, the NHLPA is not going to go for this, but when you're talking about no offsides, this
Let me stop you. We'll get back to the no offsides. What I agree that 4-on-4 won't happen, even though it would be entertaining.
Well, it fundamentally changes the sport.
I would extend the length of the ice surface. Not the width, because we see that in international hockey, and it doesn't do anything. Extend the length of the ice surface.
Yep. So I would be what kind of foot game would I be playing if I wasn't playing a 200-foot game?
Well, you might have to play a 220-foot game.
He's
or whatever it is.
A 217-foot player.
Just, you know what, because the players are so much bigger than they were when the ice surface was developed at the 200 feet.
Yep. Yeah.
So extend it a little. There'll be more room on the ice for the players to weave their magic, and it wouldn't be necessarily room on the boards, because nothing ever happens at the boards, you know, in terms of scoring chances. But extend the length of the ice, and
the only negative there though is you're going to lose two rows of seats.
Well, of course you're going to lose seats. I mean,
Drew, don't be so arbitrary. Those are the most expensive seats in the building.
That's a few hundred grand there.
Yeah,
they'll find a way to compensate. If there's one thing the NHL and the owners know how to do is they find a way to compensate for any lost revenue.
In all seriousness, though, I have no problem with that. I mean, adding, let's say, 5 feet on each side, I don't mind that, but like I don't want to start getting into the make the nets bigger. Like, enough of that nonsense.
Yeah,
like, we're not making the nets bigger.
I agree.
Move
we're
on.
Not. Yeah, that would be my proposal: is extend the ice surface.
Right. Let's get into 5 here.
No offsides.
Yeah.
Get rid of offsides on zone entries. Meaning, if the puck clears the zone, you have to reset.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when you're entering the zone, no offsides.
See, this one to me, I don't think it's going to happen. But to me,
it doesn't bother me.
No. Well, it would really open up the game, Dave, because if you think about it, I mean, you take this out. The fact is, especially in the playoffs, I mean, you see the neutral zone clogged up, and Dom talks about this in the article for The Athletic. And, you know, it would really make for a much more exciting brand of hockey, and that's what he's trying to get here. I mean, at the end of the day, the NHL, it's about the fans, it's about entertainment. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about no offsides, I mean, there would still be offsides in the sense of the two-line pass.
You would have to clear the zone. You can't just sit. Right. You know, if the puck leaves the zone, you have to leave the zone and regain entry. So you can have it basically allows for a cherry picker.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
as someone who cherry picked more than anybody else in this room, I can attest to that, to enjoying that.
And you're not talking about fruit.
No. But I can tell you right now, I don't like it.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's an interesting idea. You know, it's all about spacing. I mean, if you watch the NBA right now, everything in the NBA is about spacing and how players are spaced out, and allows players to have more creativity because there's good spacing. The NHL doesn't allow for that spacing because of the offside rule. Everything is compacted into a smaller area, and you don't get to see any creativity shine on a regular basis.
Drew, can we skip ahead to number 8? Because I realized there were a few other good ones in there. I just realized, you know, I want
to keep going, get
this
in
here because we only have a few
number
minutes.
Number 8 is power play adjustments, and inside power play adjustments, he means the penalty-killing team can't ice the puck, and a goal does not negate the power play.
Right, and the second one is more, I guess, drastic or
radical.
Radical. Yeah, that's a good word, Dave. When you're talking about, you know, the penalty killing team not being able to ice the puck, that's something, by the way, guys, that has been that idea has been around for a while. And if you think about it, I mean, you would see a lot more goals. That's what the NHL wants, right? So when Dom brings this up as his eighth way to, you know, improve the game, I like that. I mean, when you're talking about power plays, I mean, how many power plays do we see? If a team isn't able to get, you know, two or three good zone entries, oftentimes you don't even see a shot on net on a power play. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't able to ice the puck, I mean, that would make it a lot tougher. When you're talking about, you know, a goal not negating a power play, that it used to be like that. You forget about that. It used to be like that. I forget which year they changed it.
Probably had to do with Gretzky's Oilers.
Well, yeah.
Every rule that changed had to do with Gretzky's Oilers.
And again, I don't know if you should expect to see this in the next couple of years, but it's interesting. I like Dom is an outside-the-box thinker, and I like, you know, some of these points here, because at the end of the day, I think, you know, you have to at the very least consider them.
Yeah, I mean, the NHL won't because they're so afraid to do anything radical, even when the game is brutally calling out for it.
It's like when we talked to Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly and we talked about the idea of three-point games. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's fine now. It's like, really? Is it fine now?
Well, the only people who think that are the NHL general managers because it keeps them employed because they can point to these fake records
that's
as
my point.
Look how great we were.
That's right.
Yeah, so I mean, everyone else is calling out for change. They're the only ones who aren't. I like number 10 a lot. I'm on board with this one. Shorten the regular season and make the playoffs longer. You don't even have to make the playoffs longer as far as I'm concerned. Shorten the regular season. Absolutely, 100%.
76 games.
I mean, he even says 72 games. I'm fine with 76.
76 games would be fine.
You get players who are rested. Remember, rest. We're all concerned about rest. Oh, wait, 82 games is a crazy number of games.
What's the other thing that they're concerned about?
Revenue.
And so, again, to me, it's a very hard sell to ownership to say, listen, we're going to cut out six games a year. But, I guess it would be three home games that you'd lose.
Yeah, Dom says go to 72, but 76.
72 is way too little. I mean, there's no way NHL owners are going to cut out five home games.
What about start with maybe two?
Well, I'd be fine.
Go from 82 to 80.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. Anything less than 76, and this probably isn't going to happen. I think it's going to stay status quo.
It will.
But don't go from 82 to 72. Go from 82 to 80, maybe 78. But again, I mean, this is just a kind of academic exercise. And I think, you know, Dom obviously does a great job for the Athletic. But when you're talking about, we didn't have time to get into it here, Drew, but also lowering the UFA age. I mean, to me, I think the NHLPA would be very much on board with lowering the UFA age. I think you would just have a much more competitive NHL. And I think general managers would have just a better chance to acquire players in their prime. So, I mean, I'm on board with that one, too.
When we come back, the Buffalo Sabres have a new head coach. His name is Ralph Krueger. Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News will join us next to talk about it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number three starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. From the Buffalo News, he's a columnist. He also covers the Buffalo Sabres. He's our good friend, Mike Harrington. Mike, appreciate you working through our technical difficulties. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Yeah, I mean, technical difficulties have been a common thread with the Buffalo Sabres for many years, so I'm used to it.
Mike, so they obviously think they have a new, infrastructure director in Ralph Krueger, hired as the Sabres head coach earlier this week. You know, he replaces Phil Housley, who had in a couple of years couldn't get the Sabres over the hump into being a playoff team. Your initial thoughts on the hiring of Krueger, does this leave you wanting more, or do you think you like that they sort of went with a bit of a different direction?
Well, I think they kind of went outside the box here, and that's all right. I mean, do you want to retread like Jacques Martin or someone along those lines, or do you want to try something different? I think at this point, the Sabres are in a spot where you have to try something different. No one has any idea if Ralph Krueger can be a coach in the NHL for an 82-game season. He did nice things internationally with Team Europe. Those are short tournaments, and his 1 year in Edmonton was a 48-game lockout season. So it's going to be interesting to see how he works the rhythm of a full season, but I got no problem with it. You may as well try something different and see what happens.
You know, Mike, when you talk about Ralph Krueger and his time with the Swiss national team, and then he was an advisor with Team Canada at the 2014 Olympics, when you talk about, you know, his work with some of those younger star players, and, you know, maybe no other team in the NHL has more young star players than the Buffalo Sabres, when you're talking about Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart, Rasmus Dahlin, I mean, you know, there's going to be more after that. Alex Nylander is another guy. I mean, how important was that for Jason Botterill to bring in a guy like Krueger, who's worked with so many young star players over the years?
You know, it's hard to say. I think they wanted to bring someone in who could communicate to players at all levels, whether you were a veteran, a young player. I think the communication has lacked here at times over the years. You know, one thing that struck me at the press conference was when Jason Botterill said he was in the stands in 2006. When Ralph Krueger's team from Switzerland upset Team Canada in Torino, he was there because his sister Jennifer was playing for Team Canada's women's team. And that game clearly made an impression on him. And then when he comes to Buffalo in 2017, Jim Rutherford, the Penguins GM, who had worked with Krueger in Carolina, suggested to Botterill to hire Krueger. So So Botterill did contact him, but Kruger was locked in with Southampton in the Premier League at the time and turned him down. So Botterill went back to him this time. So there was a lot of connections, and Ralph Kruger being from the Winnipeg area, he was, as a fifth grader, in Jason Botterill's father's class when Jason Botterill's father taught him, now the noted sports psychologist. So there's a lot of connections there between Jason Botterill and the Botterill family and Ralph Kruger. So I think in some ways we probably should have been more in tune with that possibility.
You know, Mike, after eight straight seasons of not making the playoffs, what's the temperature like in Buffalo right now? And how are fans reacting to this news? Because obviously now you really want to see what the team is going to be able to do with a new coach in place.
The mood here is nothing short of surly. And the coaching hire is really not moving anyone one way or the other. The bottom line in most people's eyes is, you know, Toe Blake and Scotty Bowman wouldn't win with this team, never mind Phil Housley or Ralph Kruger. It's all about the things Jason Botterill does this offseason to retool this roster. This is not the NFL where you can draft five or six new starters. You're stuck with your team in the NHL, and you can't go to the draft and make yourself better because the guys you're drafting aren't playing this year, and most of them aren't playing next year either. So it's all about, in most people's eyes here, what the general manager does. And, okay, they hired Ralph Kruger as coach. Big deal. The coach isn't going to make that much of a difference unless they retool this roster.
Mike Harrington is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Buffalo Sabres offseason and their hiring of Ralph Kruger as new head coach. You know, Mike, what's priority number one for Ralph Kruger?
Well, you know, in the very short term, he's going this week with Jason Botterill back to Slovakia to the World Championships. And he is going to meet with Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart, who are there playing with Team USA and Team Canada. And that's the first thing he's really going to do as the head coach of the Sabres. Now, he's called around, talked to guys, I'm sure, but he's going to go back to Slovakia with Botterill. And then I think they have to really work with Jeff Skinner. Ralph Kruger has to forge a relationship and see if they can keep Jeff Skinner. But I think, again, there's some connection there that Botterill knew. Who was probably Jeff Skinner's favorite coach in his time at Carolina? It was Paul Maurice, coach of the Winnipeg Jets. Paul Maurice was Ralph Kruger's assistant with Team Europe. So I'm sure Jeff Skinner has inquired already with Paul Maurice, you know, give me the rundown on Ralph Kruger. And Paul Maurice certainly would give Jeff Skinner a glowing report.
You know, Mike, you mentioned Jeff Skinner, and he's obviously, you know, the big pending unrestricted free agent, and, you know, he had the great year with the Sabres, scoring 40 goals. But when you look at that defense, I mean, we know Zach Bogosian has a lot of injury problems. He's not going to be healthy at the start of the season. How important do you think it is for Jason Botterill to address a need for another top four guy on the back end?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the rumors out there is that they might be looking to trade Rasmus Ristolainen. Well, the other rumor out there that is during the coaching search, Botterill was asking candidates and asking around, how would you fix Ristolainen? Not how would you trade Ristolainen or what could you get for him? They're thin on defense. They do have a lot of prospects on defense. Now, prospects aren't going to necessarily help you this year, but in guys like Will Borgen and Casey Fitzgerald, they have some guys who are, they feel like will be in the pipeline soon enough here. But, yeah, they need better play out of Ristolainen, and that could be another priority for Ralph Kruger. Can he help fix Ristolainen? I would assume Steve Smith is going to stay on the staff. He worked with Ralph Kruger in Edmonton. You know, can they get more out of Ristolainen if they keep him this year than minus 41?
You know, Mike, you mentioned the Rochester Americans. Are there other players that you're expecting that will be able to make the jump next season for to the Sabres?
Well, Victor Olofsson, the high-scoring winger, had a 30-goal season in Rochester. He got a call up to Buffalo at the end, played a few games. I would expect him to, you know, be with the Sabres. You know, guys, you look at the playoffs this year, especially when you get to the end of the playoffs, these teams all have three and four lines, and their fourth-line guys can score. The Sabres just had black holes through lines three and four all year. They're just not deep enough up front. They have to develop more scoring power. They have to get guys like Olofsson up here in a full-time role, and that's really key. I mean, ultimately, they fell apart in the second half of the season. They have a thin lineup. They don't have enough forward lines. They don't have enough quality D pairs, and the goaltending didn't save them the second half of the year. And nothing's changing right now. It's the same team until they start to retool it. And, again, I just think the coaching hire obviously gets a lot of play in any city. It's really not that significant here because this is all on the GM to see if he can do something to fix this club.
Mike Harrington, our guest. Mike covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. You know, you mentioned the GM, and he's got the responsibility of fixing this club. You know, what assets does Botterill have to work with to improve that depth and make this team, you know, a viable playoff contender, 1 through 12 up front and then 1 through 7 on the back end?
Well, it's tough because he has the balance of you don't want to be trading your prospects, but sometimes your prospects are the best thing you have to get some quality NHL talent. And the other thing, guys, is they're drafting number 7, and then they're drafting again with a St. Louis or San Jose pick. So it's going to be one of the bottom 4 picks in the first round based on how the playoffs shake out. I think, you know, they have some first-round pick currency that they could use as a deal. They already traded 1 first-round pick, and they got Brandon Montour for it, who's clearly going to be a top 4 defenseman next year. So I think that second first-round pick will be in play to help them get somebody else here to help this club. That's really what Botterill has to, I think, the biggest currency he has to use.
Yeah, Mike, just sticking with the 2019 NHL draft, I think we all know that Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko are going to go 1-2, whatever order that is. Most people still think the Devils are going to take Hughes, but the way Kakko is playing at the World Hockey Championship.
I was going to say, I wonder if the World Championships are changing people's minds.
Exactly.
That's our 2:45 p.m. segment, so let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we won't get too into that with you, Mike, but when you're talking about, you know, a lot of the scouts are saying that, you know, the draft really starts at number 3, and when you talk about the number 7 pick for the Sabres and the fact that they have the later first round pick, is that even more reason that maybe Jason Botterill, you know, packages up some draft picks and tries to move up, considering that there's so much uncertainty, and if they do really want a player, they might have to move up to, you know, whatever it is, number 4, number 5?
You know, I don't see them doing that. I think they're going to pick at 7. I think they're more likely to trade their pick for NHL talent than to move up. I'm not sure, you know, you get to pass number 4. Who's playing in the NHL next season out of this current draft class is a real question. They need to draft a center. If they keep the 7 pick, they're going to take a center. There's a bunch out there. They don't need defensemen prospect-wise. They need centers in this organization. Oh, they had a pretty good center. Well, by the way, he's a Selke candidate this year, but Jason Botterill traded him in one of the most inglorious trades in recent NHL history as they watch Ryan O'Reilly go for a Stanley Cup. So they need to draft a center at number 7 and then see about that second pick. I would be trading that second pick as part of a package to get some NHL talent.
Couple more questions for you, Mike. Carter Hutton is really the, you know, is on the roster. Linus Allmark is an RFA. You know, of the 3 levels of concern on the Sabres, where do you rank goaltending?
It, by the end of the season, became number 1. Especially Allmark. Carter Hutton started well, dipped in the middle, finished well. Still remains a question, can he be a starting goalie at 50 to 55 games? I do think he's going to come back as the starter. He's in the second year of his 3-year deal. I don't know about Allmark. I don't know what they're going to do with him. They might need another backup. He did not play well, especially in the second half. Their team PDO was 30th in the league. Their 5-on-5 save percentage was 30th in the league, only ahead of San Jose, and Martin Jones has kind of fixed himself in the playoffs. So, yeah, the goaltending is a big concern. When they weren't saving the bad plays up front like they did in the first half, that's where the team really went under.
Based on the entire conversation, Mike, why should, you know, fans in Buffalo have any hope or think that this is going to be a playoff team next season?
Who knows? They'll retool the roster. We'll see who they get. But right now, I mean, they're falling further behind in the Atlantic Division. Joel Quenneville coaches the Florida Panthers now, and if they get Panarin and Bobrovsky, look out there. Mm-hmm. Bruce Cassidy's 4 wins away from winning the Stanley Cup. You know, look at the coaches. John Cooper, Bruce Cassidy, Mike Babcock, Claude Julien, now Joel Quenneville. What if the Ottawa Senators, who have a lot of prospects and draft picks coming, what if they hire Patrick Waugh?
Let's hope.
It's a dark, ugly situation here in Buffalo right now. There's no two ways about it.
Okay, last one for you then. Ralph Kruger, of course, has been out of hockey for the last number of years. He's been involved in English football with Southampton. What has he learned from his time with Southampton that he can bring back to the NHL game?
We're going to find that out over time. I still think Ralph Kruger projects to be the future president of the Buffalo Sabres, and this is a stopgap move for the AHL coach, Chris Taylor, to eventually take over. But Kruger obviously has a lot of skills, leadership, motivation, teamwork, team bonding. I think he's going to bring a lot of that over here not just to the locker room, but to the organization in general. I think that's going to be his real value, is some of those off-ice things. When this team goes into a dip and they really start losing their focus and concentration, can Ralph Kruger snap them back in? I think he has more tools in his toolbox to do that than the average coach.
Well, they say culture starts at the top. For the Sabres, they hope that the top means the head coach. Mike Harrington covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, always appreciate your time.
Hey, gentlemen, thanks very much.
Take care, Mike. Thanks again. When we come back, what are we talking about? We're going to talk about the Western Conference Finals. We'll, of course, discuss the officiating controversies. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
No, they didn't see it at all. And it was a fully blown missed call that led to the winning goal in this game. And, you know, you heard Alex Pietrangelo say these officials are not going to sleep very well. Absolutely right. They know they missed a call.
That's TSN's Craig Button talking about the missed call in Game 3. Of the Western Conference Final. Last night, the St. Louis Blues were able to bounce back from that disappointing overtime defeat. Even the series up against the Sharks, it's two games apiece. You're now down to a best of three in the Western Conference Final to see who's going to play the Boston Bruins.
It's been a good little series.
It has been a decent little series, yeah. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, I believe it's his final night in town, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to load it up here if I can get it going. Chris Fairbanks in town. It is his final night. Two shows. Get your tickets now. rumorscomedyclub.com. So let's start with the controversial end to Game 3, where the hand pass is clearly missed. It ends up with Erik Karlsson, the one-legged man, scoring for the San Jose Sharks to give him the 2-1 series lead.
We're going to go back. We've already had Game 4.
I know we've had Game 4.
Talk about Game 4. I don't want to go back to Game 3. I mean, that was like 4 days ago.
Okay, well, we have to talk about the what needs to be done to remedy that situation. Is there anything that needs to be done to remedy that situation?
Eye in the sky. I mean, come on. Guys, there has to be that fifth official eye in the sky. There seems to be a consensus now, and Kerry Fraser's brought it up. I mean, we had Josh Smith scouting the refs. I mean, he brought this up on Twitter after Game 3. I mean, that seems to really solve a lot of the problems, right, Dave? Drew, what you were talking about, I mean, that missed call, that hand pass, I mean, that call just has to be made. I realize that they have a tough job, linesmen and referees, but I mean, when that goal decides a key game in the Western Conference Final, I mean, you can't miss that call. And I realize that, you know, that group of officials isn't going to be involved in the playoffs any longer, but to me, like, adding a referee that's in, let's say it's a dedicated booth, and he's able to communicate with the referees on the ice, it seems like a pretty simple fix to me.
Yeah, but this
expanding video review to me, I mean, this has been floated out. I forget who floated this out. You know, you maybe have two coaches' challenges instead of one. I mean, I don't necessarily know, guys, because I think you have a bunch of issues here. It's not just the offsides. I think that every single goal should be reviewable.
I agree. The difference is, at what point in time is it too far beyond the play having occurred?
Well, no, that hand pass happened right before.
Right. So are you?
So that should be reviewable.
So
that's
long
an
as
easy
it's in
one.
In the quote unquote immediacy of the play,
Drew. Let's say that there's a hand pass,
yeah.
Okay, and then 15 seconds transpires, and then a goal is scored after that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you can go back that far. Like, I don't think, like
well,
you know what I mean?
That's the question, define the parameters.
It has to be an action that directly impacts on the goal.
Well, it's like the idea of, like, when one team scores, the other team, you play 2 minutes and the other team scores.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that first goal
yeah.
counts,
right.
and you just have to reset
yeah.
that time.
You can't go back in time.
That's right.
Like,
so the idea being, though, that, yeah, I mean, Drew's point is well made. How long is too long? I mean, to me, if it's still in the zone and you stay in the zone, if you leave the zone and play changes and then something happens, then fine, it's a little different. But like, if it's in the immediacy of right there, I mean, you have another official who can kind of be like, guys, like this just happened, mm-hmm. you know, maybe, you know, it needs to be alleviated. Because the whole point is it, there's that weight. You have to decide, is it getting the call right or versus taking up too much time of the game to affect the overall play?
I'll tell you what, if you want to expand video review.
Yep.
Get rid of the offside review. The offside
sure.
review has become so pointless.
Ridiculous. Yeah, I agree.
There was one play where that absolutely blew, which led to offside being reviewed
no.
when Matt Duchene was offside by three feet and somehow they blew it and, you know, just punish that official or
the
whatever.
The problem is now it's in.
Get rid of it.
So I don't know if you can get rid of it.
If you can get rid, I'm willing to settle for expanded video review if you get rid of the offside review where millimeters are all of a sudden treated as
if. But you're not really expanding it then because, right, you're adding something, but then you're subtracting
that's right,
something.
So you're modifying it to a more important play than the offside review.
And I got to tell you, I think fans of most teams and people who watch the game and are participating in the game at any level would rather those calls get be made right as opposed to, you know, you're so what? You have to wait an extra 10 seconds, 15 seconds after a goal is scored to say, okay, it's a good goal. You know what? I mean, at the end of the day, if you're a St. Louis Blues fan and you just got hosed on that call, you're saying, couldn't we have wasted 15 more seconds to wait for the fifth ref who's sitting, like as he suggested, let's say he sits in between the penalty box, make a little space for him.
Yep.
He's got his monitor. He's watching the play. He's seeing what's happening or he's up in the, whatever. It doesn't matter where he is. He sees it and he calls it and he makes the right call. And he catches something that is maybe crucial to the play that is missed by the, because we're taking into account the fact that the hockey is such a fast game that it's easy for people to cast aspersions on referees and officials and linesmen and say, oh, how did you miss that? Well, you know what? Hockey is extraordinarily fast. Anybody who's played it knows how fast this game is.
Well, when I play, it's a little slower.
Yeah, it's a little bit slower. But the point is that it's
more lumbering than it is anything.
But the idea being that you've got this incredibly fast game, things happen. If someone who is an official who is qualified to be on the ice and isn't participating in the game, but is qualified to do so, says, I saw this, and then the other ref, they huddle. Well, I really don't have a problem with it because, you know, I'd rather get the game right. I'd rather have that call go right. I'd rather OT continue. And I'd rather get the, you know, if San Jose goes on to win, then you're okay with them winning because at least it doesn't spark this controversy that goes on and on and on and on.
Okay, let's talk about the series now. It's a best of three between the Blues and the Sharks. The Sharks obviously have home ice advantage. Game five going tomorrow night, or is it tomorrow afternoon back in
afternoon.
Tomorrow afternoon back in San Jose. Central. Yeah, so it'd be an early start, 12 noon Pacific time, or in and around there. So
that's
talk
a great
about
time for a game during the long weekend, right? Sunday at 2 o'clock. I mean, nobody's doing anything, right?
Yeah, exactly. So who's the driver's seat right now? I mean, you look at the San Jose Sharks.
I don't think anybody is. I mean, when you're talking about, I mean, you look at how Martin Jones, guys, and Jordan Binnington have played in this series. Mm-hmm. I mean, Binnington has had two good games, and he's had two just awful games.
Yeah.
And Martin Jones hasn't been good either, and he's now 3-5 on the road in the playoffs. And, you know, you look at that game yesterday, and, you know, in my opinion, you know, the game is over after the first period.
2-0 Blues at that point.
Right. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, the second goal, you know, Justin Braun puts it into his own net. But when you're talking about, you know, the Sharks actually just completely, if you like advanced stats, just go to Natural Stat Trick and look at the possession. The Sharks just dominated the possession, including the first period. But you look at the second and third periods, I mean, it was all Sharks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go back to that game, and, you know, I made a couple notes here. There was a big save in the first period.
What did you do in research?
You know, Melker Carlson had the good chance, and Jordan Binnington made the good save. But to me, the big play in that game was a Manitoba boy, Joel Edmondson, Timo Meier, if you remember, right before Tyler Bozak scored on that power play. Timo Meier took that hooking penalty and Bozak scored. There was a chance right in front of Jordan Binnington and Joel Edmondson lifted the stick. Who was it here? It was it Donskoy or was it Meier? He had a terrific chance right in front of the net, and Joel Edmondson just barely lifted his stick enough so that he couldn't put it by Edmondson, and that would have been such a turning point in the game. Instead of the game being tied up, you know, St. Louis goes on and scores another goal, and they go up 2-0. The way Binnington was playing in that game, you just knew that it was going to be tough, and sure, they scored a goal in the third period, made it a little bit interesting, but, you know, this series is so even. You know, you wonder about the health of Erik Karlsson, even though, you know, he ends up getting an assist on Hurdle's goal.
And he gets the game-winning goal in overtime in game three.
And it's amazing because, you know, if you actually look, guys, he didn't play for a nine-minute stretch in the third.
He had like two shifts or something.
He came in later in the third period. He was on the ice when the Sharks were all over the Blues in their own zone. They almost tied it up there. But when you're talking, and that's what I'm saying, this game was not lopsided. It's not like the Blues were, you know, in commanding, you know, control of this game. I mean, the Sharks could have easily forced this to overtime. So right now, going back to San Jose, I think, if anything, the Sharks have a bit of an advantage because they have two more games coming up at home.
We shall see. Game five of that series goes tomorrow afternoon back in Northern California. With the winner, of course, goes on to face the Boston Bruins in the Stanley Cup final.
I went back. It was Timo Meier that had the chance. There was a rebound. I forget who initially took the shot. It might have been Logan Couture. Timo Meier had a chance on a rebound, and Binnington's pad was a little bit overextended, and Edmondson just got a piece of his stick, and then that was actually early in the second. So at that point, it was already 2-0. But the point was that they could have made it 2-1 early in the second period as opposed to, you know, going into the third down 2-0. But that was just, a really good play by Edmondson, a pending RFA that doesn't get talked about a lot. He's had a really good series, especially with Vince Dunn out of the lineup.
There you have it. When we come back, Jason Shaver is going to join us. Jason is the Chicago Wolves broadcaster. The Wolves and the San Diego Gulls are into the Western Conference Final in the AHL in the race for the Calder Cup trophy. We talk little AHL playoff hockey. Hockey up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website is illegalcurve.com. We're pleased to be joined by Jason Shaver. Jason is the play-by-play broadcaster for the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves and San Diego Gulls are doing battle in the AHL's Western Conference Finals. The Wolves up 1-0. Game two goes later on tonight. Jason, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Excited to talk a little bit about the Calder Cup playoffs.
Absolutely. You know, we might as well talk about it. Start with last night's game one. The Wolves take game one on home ice. You know, what was your sort of main takeaway from last night's game? And you know, how do you think that's going to factor into tonight's game two?
Well, it was a heck of a hockey game for two teams that, imagine this, are playing for the first time all season long head-to-head. They didn't meet in the regular season. They played twice last year. Yeah, so it was a really good hockey game. You're kind of thinking maybe it'll be a feeling out process, but they got after it. Chicago on three occasions had a single goal lead. The goals probably had the better chances in the hockey game. And then in the third, they took a 4-3 lead only to see the Wolves tied up. And then how about this? The 20-year-old from Winnipeg, Cody Glass, who's just a month and a half into his pro campaign, gets his second overtime game winner of the Calder Cup playoffs, and the Wolves take game one on home ice.
You know, that has to also be the first professional hockey league goal that was scored by a glass on a glass. I mean, I can't imagine that ever happening in any other situation, right, Jason? But, you know, and we want to talk more about Cody Glass, obviously, you know, a first round pick, first ever pick of the Vegas Golden Knights franchise. I wanted to ask you about a guy who's very familiar to Manitoba Moose hockey fans. That, of course, is Ty McGinn. He played last year for the Moose, obviously, you know, from the McGinn brothers, his other brother, Jamie McGinn. But when you're talking about time again, you know, he had 12 points during the regular season. He's got 10 points in 12 playoff games for the Wolves. He scored again last night. I mean, just how important has the veteran McGinn been for this Wolves team?
He has been absolutely incredible for whatever reason. And we were up in Winnipeg earlier this year talking with Kevin Trebledayoff, who used to be the GM here in Chicago, and just it wasn't going well for him. And Zinger made the trade with the Wolves, who were in need of some forwards, and they had extra defensemen in Jimmy Olney. And I would say for 2 months, it was just kind of a swap of two players looking for a second opportunity. You mentioned the 12 points he had in the regular season. Those basically came in the last probably 18 games. And with the Wolves losing some key players to injury, he magically started to step up, and it's carried into the playoffs here. He's been a welcome addition, and he's found his passion for the game again. You know, he's a guy that played 89 NHL games throughout his career. His brother, Brock, had a heck of a couple rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs with Carolina. And for whatever reason, I think he just wasn't comfortable. And about 3 months ago, he kind of found a new light, and he has been dominating.
Well, you know, Jason, we're a Manitoba-based show, and even though we're talking to you with representing the Chicago Wolves, there's a lot of Manitobans on that team. So we could ask you about all of them, but got to start with Cody Glass. Like you were just touched on, 6 games in the regular season, 12 already in the playoffs. Just how impressed have you been by this young man?
He is remarkable. Obviously, I don't know him well yet, but every time that we've talked with him or we've interviewed him, he is such a great
composed kid for 20 years old. Obviously, he had some hardships growing up, and his family has really helped pave the way for him, and he's done a remarkable job. But, boy, his dad, Jeff, who is in Winnipeg with his brothers, they have raised a heck of a young man. And my favorite story about him, Will Nichols, the director of player development for the Vegas Golden Knights. So he was selected, first ever pick by the Vegas Golden Knights back in 2017. So he's there for the first round, and then the next day, the second round takes place, and I'm sure you guys have covered drafts before. It's a very long, long day. And he's already accomplished what he came there for. He made a point to show up on the second day because he wanted to shake the hands of every Vegas draft pick and meet them and get to know his future teammates. I mean, that really, outside of all the offensive numbers and the reason he moved up to number six in the draft, impressed the Vegas Golden Knights more than anything.
Jason Shaver is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason is the Chicago Wolves broadcaster. The Wolves have a 1-0 series lead over the San Diego Gulls in the AHL's Western Conference Final. Game 2 goes tonight in the Chicago area. Jason, Daniel Carr had a great season for the Chicago Wolves. He actually ended up being the AHL's most valuable player despite missing the final 18 games and the first round of the playoffs after suffering an illegal hit from Jordan Nolan of from San Antonio. Antonio, you know, just how great of a season has Daniel Carr had? I mean, he's not a household name, really. And how important is he to the Wolves' chances to move on to the Calder Cup championship?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge loss when they lost him to the lineup. He was leading the league in points and, I mean, running away with the league point race. I mean, to the fact that he finishes the year with 71 points, that was third best in the league. So despite not playing the last 6 weeks of the regular season and then missing the first round, he jumps back into the lineup, and as you know, the pace gets quicker as the playoffs go on, and he somehow manages to lead the Wolves in second-round points with 7, and he scored a huge goal last night for Chicago. So despite missing 2 months, he has lost no rust, and he is one of those players that is just so competitive. The offensive numbers are impressive, but the reason he has those offensive numbers is how tenacious he is on pucks. It's just remarkable for a guy that's 6 foot, and 6 foot might be a little bit of a stretch, not knocking his size, but he's going up against 6'5" defensemen, and he'll come away with the puck. I think that's what's the most impressive thing about him. He had a decent run a year ago in Montreal, spent half the season with the Canadiens, and this year ended up just getting 6 games with Vegas. But I would expect this will be a big off season for him, and there's plenty of NHL teams that could use a player like Daniel Carr.
Yeah, Jason, we got to ask you about another one of those Manitoba connections. Zach Whitecloud, born in a nearby Brandon, Manitoba. You know, he signed by the Golden Knights last September. He was an undrafted NCAA free agent out of Bemidji State University, and he's also another Manitoban who's contributing big time to the Chicago Wolves playoff run with 8 points in 12 games. Just how impressive has Whitecloud been for you on the back end of the Wolves in his rookie season?
He's been remarkable. He led the league in plus-minus as a rookie defenseman. And, all right, rookie defenseman. The Wolves, for most of the season, had 4 rookie defensemen. So, I mean, he was literally thrown into the heat of things his first year. And, you know, sometimes the knock on college players is they're not used to the grind of the pro season. Well, he certainly got a lot of game action. He played in 74 of the 76 and has been great. He's a right-handed shot and a good first passer. He's got some size to him. So he's a guy that, you know, just looking at the depth chart, and if Vegas decides to make a move on a defenseman just to get some salary cap relief, I could easily see him being in the National Hockey League next year. Another one, I mean, it's friendly Manitoba, right? And every one of those guys from Manitoba that the Wolves have, and it's the first time that they've had 4 guys from the Winnipeg, Manitoba area this season, are just remarkable human beings. And he brings a smile to the rink every day, but he's also a professional. The guy takes care of himself. Like, this is truly his job, and he does everything he can to prepare every game, whether it's diet, rolling out, doing the workouts pre and post game. He's a remarkable guy.
You know, Jason, I want to ask you about Brooks Masek. I mean, he's such a fun story because he went off to Germany and played in the DEL for 5 seasons, I believe, came back, and he got off to one of the most torrid paces, and I pay a lot of attention to the Manitoba Moose, and I found myself fascinated by his story because I think he had like 18 or 19 goals in the first 20 games or something like that. And it just seemed like he was scoring at such a crazy pace for the Chicago Wolves. But what a nice story it's been for him to be able to come back to North America and contribute. What has he found that has been really allowed him to make that adjustment to the North American game?
Well, he ends up with 26 goals, and you mentioned all those goals. He did that on literally, he had 18 goals on like 30 or 40 shots. He was shooting 40% into December. But he didn't shoot the puck a lot. So I'm thinking like, man, you should shoot the puck more. Everything is going in. I didn't know anything about him outside of the fact that, you know, he's been playing over in Germany. His dad is German, so he had his German citizenship, and he was a part of that silver medal winning team in Germany at the Olympics. And, you know, sometimes as journalists or reporters, we ask dumb questions, and I just assume the answer would be like, yeah, it was shocking that we got the silver medal. No, he believed, and the rest of his team believed going into the Olympics, that they were going to medal, and they certainly could have easily won the gold medal. And he was a little bit offended that I thought, well, that was an upset, wasn't it? So this kind of shows what he brings to the table. He's a winner. He had two German League championships. And again, he missed the last 6 weeks of the season as well with injury. So he easily could have led the league in goal scoring because he had 26 and missed a lot of time.
Last question for you, Jason. Obviously, the Wolves have that 1-0 lead with Game 2 going tonight in Chicago. From your perspective, what's going to be the defining factors in this series as to see who moves on to the Calder Cup Championship to play the winner of Toronto versus Charlotte?
Well, I think it's two teams that are almost equal. They've got some bigger forwards that can play physical, but they're not necessarily a fighting-type team. They've got good mobile defense. Special teams for both squads have been good, and the goaltending's been outstanding. I think San Diego, at least last night, got a lot of chances on their transition rushes, and the Wolves got their goals by kind of grinding it out and cycling and good offensive puck possession zone time. So I guess whoever can establish that a little bit more throughout a 60-minute hockey game or more, which you saw last night going into overtime. But I would call this one a pick'em series. Even from a Wolves perspective, you'd like to see Chicago win. But it would be no surprise if San Diego was to come away with this one either.
Jason Shaver is a broadcaster for the Chicago Wolves, the Wolves and the Gulls. Game 2 goes tonight in Chicago. Jason, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yep, thank you guys, and enjoy the summer.
Take care, Jason. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss Kaapo Kakko's performance at the World Hockey Championships. Is he maybe making people change their thought as to go who's going to go first overall at the upcoming NHL draft? That's coming up next. One final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Second period, Denmark up 1-0. Kakko comes flying down the wing, goes around the defender, tucks it in past Sebastian Dam. A sensational goal by Kakko. He scored 6 of Finland's 10 goals at the World Hockey Championship and now tied for the tournament lead.
Damn.
Besides having an unbelievable name, Kaapo Kakko is breaking out in North America's hockey's consciousness with his performance at the World Hockey Championships. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment this Saturday afternoon. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. Quick programming note, next Saturday, it's semifinal Saturday at the World Hockey Championships. We'll bring you both semifinals, which means we're going to take the Saturday off. So we'll be back with you in 2 weeks' time. That's, I believe, the 1st of June, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
The 1st of June. Yeah, where did the time go? So no show next Saturday. We'll be back on the 1st of June, where we'll have the Stanley Cup Finals to talk about and everything else. But right now, we're going to talk about Kaapo Kakko and his performance for Team Finland. 6 goals, 1 assist, 7 points in 4 games played for Team Finland in the World Hockey Championships. Are people maybe beginning to rethink as to who's going to go first overall in the upcoming draft? Jack Hughes, the thought upon first overall pick, is still looking for his first point in the tournament.
He picked one up already.
Did he pick one up today?
Yeah, he got an assist.
Oh, I didn't know they played today. So there you go. So all these stats were entering today. So Jack Hughes got his first point today. 0 goals, 1 assist in 5 games played for Team USA. Maybe now would the Devils begin to think maybe Kaapo Kakko's their guy as opposed to Jack Hughes?
Well, I mean, you look at what Kaapo Kakko has done this year in the Finnish Liga with TPS Turku. He broke Alexander Barkov's record for most goals by an 18-year-old, right? So, I mean, it's not just the World Hockey Championship, but, you know, you talk about the hat trick against Team Slovakia. That was the opening win for Finland. And then that goal against Denmark, guys. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you know, just go on YouTube and first off, you could look at all of his six goals. I mean, Kako is going to be an unbelievable player. And I go back to the 2017 draft in Chicago, and it reminds me a little bit of Nico Hischier and Nolan Patrick. You remember Nolan Patrick was the number one consensus pick
all
and
year
then,
round.
And then towards the end, Nico Hischier, it looked like the Devils were going to take him. And it's not exactly the same because you're talking about, you know, a center versus a winger, whereas Hischier and Patrick, you're talking about two centers. Mm-hmm. But I think absolutely the New Jersey Devils amateur scouting staff is keeping an eye on Kaapo Kakko and Jack Hughes. I mean, it's going to be one of those two players. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be anybody else, but is there anybody in a better position, Dave, than the Rangers?
No, they pick the, just like I mean, the Jets were with Laine and Matthews.
Exactly, and that was the other thing I was going to say. There are similarities to 2016 as well, right? Because, I mean, if you're the Jets, you didn't expect Toronto to take Laine number one, but if the Leafs were going to take Laine, okay, well, there you go. You got your generational center. So same thing goes for the Rangers. If you get Kakko or Hughes at number two, I mean, the argument is going to be, well, you're getting like a player who in any other draft year should go number one. So back to your point, I realize we only have like 3 minutes here, Drew, but when you're talking about Kakko, absolutely. What he's doing you know, at the World Hockey Championship, what he did in the Finnish League this year, just incredible. 22 goals as an 18-year-old. I mean, that's Barkov, Laine type of stuff. So absolutely, I think the Devils are considering him. I would still give the advantage to Hughes. I mean, 20 points in 7 games at the World Under-18s. I mean, Jack Hughes is unbelievable as well, but we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, there's a long time to go. There's a month to go, and a lot can change. I mean, these teams meet. You know, certain amateur scouts have a guy that's maybe a little bit higher or a little bit closer to Jack Hughes. So right now, it's a little bit of a mystery, but I still don't think you can say Kakko is number one over Hughes. Hughes is probably still number one, but the gap is definitely closed.
I think the tendency is to not allow one tournament to define the player, and I think what you have to do is look at the sum total of all the parts and what they've been able to do over the course of their career as young professionals or amateurs. And I think from that perspective, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, are you going to give it to Kakko simply because he's been phenomenal? Now, obviously, he's been phenomenal throughout, but that's why he's going to be one or two. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, I think that, you know, I agree with you, Drew. I think the Rangers are sitting there going, okay, we were going to take, we'll be happy with either one.
Yeah, we don't even have to think about it. I mean, conventional wisdom is you usually take the center first overall, but given the success you're having and dominance you're seeing from some wingers as of late in the NHL, you know, Patrick Kane, you know, Mitch Marner, guys who play on the wing who can really drive your team,
right?
Maybe that's beginning to take that conventional wisdom and flipping it on its head a little bit.
If you think about it, I mean, the Devils could be looking at their lineup, and Travis Zajac right now is, of course, their second line center. When Hischier was injured, he became the number one center, but you have the potential to have Nico Hischier, Jack Hughes, and Pavel Zacha, all first round draft picks up the middle. But on the other hand, your first line, if you draft Kaapo Kakko, could be Taylor Hall, Nico Hischier, and Kaapo Kakko, because he's a right winger. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be right up there with, you know, the perfection line of Marchand, Pastrnak, and Bergeron as eventually one of the most skilled lines in the league.
Eventually being the key word there. But I mean, it's a real fascinating debate.
Kakko's going to play in the NHL next year. There's no doubt.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Yeah. You see what he's doing against professionals. I mean, you saw what he did against professionals in Finland this year, and you see what he's doing against professionals at the World Hockey Championships right now. So there's no question that he's certainly having a breakout performance, especially for those of us in North America who might not be keeping that close of an eye on the Finnish Elite League on a regular basis.
I think what he's doing is he's just making an exciting finish towards the draft. Like, maybe it would have been a little more ho-hum and we would have just gone Hughes, Kakko, and that would have been it.
Yeah.
I think what he's doing is he's changing the narrative slightly and just making it a little more interesting as the lead up to the draft.
Well, what I think is going to be very interesting is Chicago's got the number 3 overall pick, right? And Podkolzin, I think that's how you pronounce his name, is the Russian forward. A lot of people had him, a winger, a lot of people had him as number 3, and after that it was Dylan Cousins, Lethbridge of the Western Hockey League, but now a lot of people have Bowen Byram potentially going number 3, and if you think about it, like, Chicago has drafted Boqvist. They got him last year.
Adam Boqvist.
Swedish defenseman.
Yeah.
So, and you look at that blue line, I mean, they're kind of retooling their blue line, so maybe they go with Bowen Byram, and then Colorado's got number 4, so if Bowen Byram slips to number 4, and you've already got Cale Makar, I mean, it's basically wide open after number one and number two.
Absolutely. That's it for this Saturday afternoon edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thank you to all of our guests who joined us on this afternoon's program. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. It'll be available for download on Google Play. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review and give us a rating if you enjoyed what you heard this afternoon here on TSN Radio 1290. Big props to producer Chris Curry doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.